Hello, everyone. This is Water Cooler Chats. I'm Frank Fagnone, the self-proclaimed Southern gay Italian dyslexic dumpster diver. And today's conversation is with Joe McGill. He is the founder of the Slave Dwelling Project. And Joe, thank you so much for taking my call.
You are so welcome, Franklin.
Now, Joe, my first question, which probably if people listen to this all the time are tired of me asking it, but it's real important for me to know how you self-identify. How do you see yourself? If you could give me whatever those series of words are.
I am a 54-year-old African-American male, South Carolinian.
South Carolinian. That has some meat on the bone that you can talk about, specifically barbecue, right? We joked about that the other day.
Yeah. When you talk barbecue, you got to know... In South Carolina, you mean pork, some variation thereof of sauces used.
Now, to jump right in, I know that prior to the Slave Dwelling Project, founding of that, you worked for various other preservation organizations, and I know in addition to the Slave Dwelling Project, you worked for other preservation sites. I'm really interested in your perception, and not specifically with any of those organizations, but in your perception, how you being black and the other categories that you've listed has affected your involvement in the museum field, if at all?
Well, it has. Being African-American male and seeing voids that are in our stories that we tell, the buildings that we choose to preserve, it gives anyone on the outside looking in a false perception of the history of America. It gives people the impression that, you know, we were always a great nation and we did not commit any atrocities along the way. And, coming from where I come from and seeing these things and sometimes being on the negative end of this false perception, I think that that weighs heavily on how I live my life and what I choose to do to help correct this wrong in the telling of this history.
Now, a lot of people will cite that one of the problems in historic sites and museums in general is that most of the leadership is kind of straight white male or people of privilege, and that there is a kind of glass ceiling for people of color, that they can only get so high up into the hierarchy of management with museums. What's your opinion on that, and how has that affected your involvement with the museum field?
Well, yeah, I agree that there is a stranglehold on the leadership by white males. In order to be the beneficiary of nepotism, you have to have someone on the inside. That has not necessarily been the case for African Americans. So therefore, the stories that are being protected, the stories that are being told, are those that have been passed down, that tells the stories of those white males that have had the stranglehold on the leadership of this nation. Even from the founding of this nation, we were always catering to the white male and the white male of privilege. And those things have been passed down. The DNA is there. And in the stories that we tell, it's telling their stories and keeping them on an elevated status and leaving out a lot of the rest of the history and telling the parts of the foundation and who propped these men up. In other words, the people who were out there doing the real work, if you will, the folks in the trenches, the enslaved people, those stories are usually neglected.
And not just from a historic perspective, I think I'm also hearing from you that it is continued with the actual kind of management of the very organizations that have been dedicated to tell these historic narratives, correct? That you feel like the same type of individual for whom we are telling the narrative is also the person who's running the organization.
yeah, they're still in control. Therefore, the stories will continue to protect or keep archived and keep that story of the white male propped up, because it's still the white males who are in the positions to control what stories will be told. Therefore, you know, that void will continue to exist if organizations, grassroots organizations, other elements of the population, including, you know, white females for that matter, mm-hmm. you know, if they're not a part of the decision-making process, you know, to help tell the story, then there'll always be that void. The story will always be the same. Those on the outside looking in will continue to think that we've been a nation that started out well, and we're okay in the middle, and up to this point, we're still well. But we know that's not the case. We make the mistakes along the way, and those are the stories that are less told.
Well, are you also suggesting that if someone is a kind of straight white male, that category, and we're using that broadly, but we know we're talking about a kind of leadership position, that they're incapable of understanding and helping move forward the very concepts that your slave dwelling project, for instance, is promoting? Is it possible that there are people out there who fit that category who are helpful rather than adversarial to the idea?
Well, I get a lot of individuals staff members from various organizations that they get it. They're on the same page as I am. But usually these are the people who are not in the decision-making capacity. And they take this idea that I have, you know, to those decision makers within their organizations, and it gets nixed. You know, it's not sexy enough for them, or they're protecting some, you know, maybe some slave-holding ancestors, and maybe they have some ties to some old money that they don't want to reveal, or maybe there's something in their DNA that may reveal that their ancestors were not only slave owners, but they are connected through the DNA. I mean, actually kin, you know, blood. But there's you know, they're the folks in the positions to help this this thing that I do prosper.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, on the same token, there are those who could hinder it also, and you know, until they. You know, until they get it that, you know, only part of the story is being told in some of these museums, some of these historic sites, then they're going to always have blinders on and want to just continue to tell that story that keeps people in their comfort zone, the story that, you know, make some of these historic sites, you know, number one, a place of destination. You know, if the whole story of these places were to be told, then, you know, they may move down a notch. And I don't, there are a lot of organizations that are not ready for that.
Now, we also, you've been involved with nonprofits your whole life, so you understand this, that these nonprofit organizations are essentially facilitated and run by boards, volunteer boards. And those boards and the complexion of those boards help direct the very mission of the organization itself. So talk to me about how you see this kind of, in a way, inequality, both at the staff level, but at the board level, can be helped. Because your comments are directed at the kind of management of these organizations and the decision-making. Really, where are the changes needed in nonprofit organizations?
I think it's certainly the board. I mean, they're the ultimate decision-makers. But you know, the staff members, we got to look at ourselves as staff members also. Sometimes we're not always the solution. Sometimes we're the problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we got to, if we're comfortable in telling that story that we tell at these sites, and if it is not all inclusive, then I'm sure, you know, there are ways that those things can be addressed from the staff level. Of course, again, ultimately the board is the ultimate decision maker. You know, another thing that we deal with is the fact that sometimes we get the tail that wags the dog,
yeah.
and we get these funders or potential funders that we pursue, And sometimes we let them dictate the stories that we tell. And a lot of times some of these funders, especially in the case of individual funders, you know, they don't want to go down that road of telling stories, especially if it tells something about their ancestors that they're trying to, that they want to hold on to or they want to protect.
Well, it's both, as you said, a kind of historic narrative piece, but also an economic piece, because if they're telling a story that their visitors, primarily who are attending right now, find it difficult and would slowly go to other sites, then it would have a bottom line effect on their budgets. And you're suggesting that that's not something that they want. So the boards are going to shy away from that as a historic narrative because it will have a direct relationship on their financial picture. Yes?
That is correct. I think a lot of organizations that are going to do things, I should do things similar to what, Montpelier, I'm very familiar with what they did in Monticello. You know, they got some funding from a very prosperous donor, but you know, that those funding came with the stipulation that, you know, you gotta be more inclusive. Yeah, we love these nice architecturally significant buildings that you guys protect, but there's more to the story than the aesthetics.
Yeah.
You know, there's more to the story than what you see as you approach that building. And recreate those slave dwellings and put them there. And therefore, when you put them there, then that part of the story cannot be ignored, at least not as easily as it has been in the past. You know, there might still be some folks who still have blinders. And if that's the case, so be it. But, don't you give them the excuse to walk away from that place, you know, not knowing the whole story.
Now, some people look at the staffs of a lot of historic sites, not all of them, but a lot of historic sites, and say that the staff themselves are not diverse. And when you seek diversity in the staff, there's not a lot of people of color who want to be in those particular sites, and you hear because they're not telling the stories of the people of color. So in a way, it's a back and forth, right? That there are museum professionals of color that want to be involved in historic sites, but they don't want to be involved in historic sites if they're not telling the full story. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, it kind of works both ways. There are some of us as African Americans who could, if they would, get over themselves and go into those positions and be there at the table to help make a difference. You know, there are some sites out there that, that do living history, but there are some of us as African Americans who think that aspect of history is degrading. They don't want to don that uniform of an enslaved person and tell that story. I'm not there. I'm not one of those. I don't mind, putting on those outfits and telling that part of the story. And if it has to start there, so be it. I mean, we got to be there. We got to be able. We got to not be shameful of our enslaved ancestors. You know, none of those folks were born slaves. That was a condition subjected upon them. You got to be able to tell their stories. You know, if it means putting on a suit and tie and going and doing a daily job in that suit and tie, then so be it. If it means that you got to, put on an outfit of an enslaved person, then so be it. You know, I do both. I don't mind. I can move easily between those two things. And I certainly do not mind doing that. But get to the root of your question. There are a lot of organizations out there that do not have that diversity necessary to tell the whole story. Some folks don't have the courage to want to even go there to tell that whole story. But there are, there are organizations, there are resources out there that can help people tell those stories if indeed they seek those services.
Well, this brings up an interesting point, and that is that I feel very strongly that today's paper can really inform the way we answer questions and run our historic sites. And you lead into a conversation, which is in today's paper, Lin-Manuel Miranda is leaving Hamilton. And one of the things that he has stipulated in his in the kind of remaking of the theater piece is that all of the positions will be played by people of color. And there's been some conversation that, for instance, Colonial Williamsburg should be doing the same thing, that first-person narratives don't necessarily have to be played by the race of the person as they were originally intended. You touch on that a little bit. Speak to me about that in relation to, for instance, Hamilton and maybe Colonial Williamsburg. Are there instances where you feel like that is okay, or do you feel like we should make sure that the portrayal is race accurate?
I think that the portrayal should be race accurate because, again, you know, we're talking about enslaved people, the enslaved ancestors. I go to sites, some sites, and they're just, you know, they're demonstrating brick making or blacksmithing or something that enslaved people would have done. And I think if we're in that setting, or if we are portraying something enslaved people would have done, then those people, you know, doing that, you know, should be African American, you know, so that, you know, that's the way I feel about that. And the way I feel about that is because I don't mind doing it myself. You know, I wouldn't want to impose anything on anyone that I wouldn't myself do. In that sense, I think if one were to, you know, consider living history, I think that it should be race appropriate.
Interesting. Now, so you wouldn't feel comfortable with a white person doing something, as you were saying, brick making. You would, if that were historically a slave's job at, let's just say, Montpelier, you want that to be done by an African American. And there's also an economic issue here, because those are jobs for interpreters and actors, and that is funding someone's life, correct?
Yeah, correct. And again, those roles should be lived out historically, lived out appropriately. In those opportunities to do living history, they should be race appropriate.
That's great, Joe, and thank you so much. I know this is a quick chat. I could keep having a much longer chat with you, but as I've always liked to say, you know, we're not going to find the answers to things unless we ask the right questions. And, Joe, I think what you're doing with the Slave Dwelling Project is really important, and you know you have my absolute support in what you're doing. Thanks a lot for speaking with me today.
All right, Franklin, you're welcome.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Bye.